Delicata back on the fan. We are down with the king topic of the day, and it is Aaron Glenn BT and also Aaron Rodgers as we await Aaron Boone, who will be in studio with us for an hour coming up at 1 o'clock. So we're looking forward to that. But we started talking about the extra comments from Glenn. You know, we were on the air yesterday. We carried the press conference live here. But then he said a lot of interesting things off the air as well, to where I do have belief that he knows how to change a culture. Will he be allowed to do it, you know, with ownership potentially getting in the way? Or, you know, is he going to actually be able to follow through and get some wins here? We'll find out. But to me, it's going to be telling on what Aaron Rodgers decides. We've heard the thoughts about what Glenn would want, what Woody would want, what Muji would want. We don't know, but we've heard that, you know, thought process. We don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to be okay with Aaron Glenn and Muji in place. And to me, that'll be telling, because I think if Rodgers is willing to come back, I think that's a good sign for the Jets structure and hirings that they just made.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Sal, there's a lot of things that we don't know about this. We just try to piece it together. Yeah. So it's really a process of elimination. We don't know if Muji is eventually going to find Aaron Glenn a true franchise quarterback, a young one, like other teams find their coaches. We don't know that. I think what I do know, what I strongly feel that I know, maybe I don't truly know, but I think I know, is that he will be authentic. I don't think the speed of the city is going to be too quick for him. I think he's going to be the leader. There's nothing nebulous about his messaging. I'm in charge. You're going to follow, or it's just not going to work out. And I think that applies to Aaron Rodgers. You know, you could tell immediately that the placation is not there. It was such a different presentation by Saleh. Even the way, remember when OTA started and Rob and Aaron was obviously in Egypt.
Yes.
The way it was presented. There was a lot of ums. Like, just he was like beating around the bush, and then he said, "Yeah, you know, Rodgers.
Inexcused,
yeah,
right.
You know, unexcused." And just, but it wasn't said with authority or any sort of presence or conviction. That is not going to happen with Aaron Glenn. I think the message has already been delivered, and it's my hope that Aaron Rodgers says, yeah, I want to jump back in and run this thing back with these guys.
Glenn would be like, yeah, he's not going to be here, and I approved it. Next question. Like, what are you going to say to that? Yeah, that's how it feels with him right now. When they were asking him yesterday some of the things, you highlighted some of it earlier in case you missed anything.
Yeah, I got check a
it
few
out,
of them for you.
Check it out on the free Odyssey app. For me, when they were asking him, well, if Aaron Rodgers comes back or not, is it going to be a football decision? It's like, yeah, it's going to be a football decision. It's what we do here. It's the entire roster. Guys, it's not about Aaron Rodgers. It's about the football team and this entire roster, and everything is going to be based off of football decisions. Now, if you get to the root of that, based off of a football decision, what are the better options at quarterback for Aaron Glenn? Like, you went over the names before. Is Justin Fields mildly appealing because of the upside there? Sure. Is Justin Fields on the level of quarterback, even at this point in Rodgers' career, as Aaron Rodgers? Absolutely not.
No.
So building a successful foundation, or building a foundation to have sustained success, which Aaron Glenn wants, I think Aaron Rodgers got to be the guy.
Yeah, I do too. And you know what's funny too, because we carried the press conference here on the show.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we got back to the show when we wrapped up. It started at 1, so we had about a good 45 minutes of Muji and Glenn and Woody before that. It was okay. It was kind of short, but really the better stuff in a lot of ways came in the scrums, because think about this. You know, when you're the head coach of, when you go to a new situation, you are made very aware of, unless you have a horrendous inept PR team, which the Jets don't, you are made very crystal clear, hey, you're going to get some Rodgers stuff, you're going to get some Woody stuff, you're going to get some of this, you're going to get some, maybe some Parcells stuff, you're going to get a lot of stuff, so be ready for it. And it's one thing, like, when you go up there, as he did before he was asked questions, when he just delivered his message. That's easy because you've got your bullet points, and then you just kind of shoot off the hip and you go from there. What's harder is when you get in that scrum one-on-one direct, and you still have perfect answers. And one of the answers was, yeah, and even like that's more of a challenge because you don't know exactly what's coming because you're not dictating the pace of the play, so to speak. And one of the things that I love that he said, well, two things. It was about Rodgers, and he just turned and said, listen, and he was kind of kidding, but you knew he wasn't. He's like, you guys are going to try to get me. You're not going to get me. Like, you're not going to get me. And then the other one, it may have been Samini, where they were trying to connect that thread from Parcells, and he's like, hey, I'm not Parcells. I'm Aaron Glenn.
Right.
I'm like, wow, this dude is not messing around.
Now, you're not wrong in when you say it could be a little more challenging, but do you know why it's really not that difficult? If you are honest and tell the truth and be true to yourself, you cannot get in trouble. You cannot back yourself into a corner. You cannot be pushed around. And that's what Glenn did right from the get-go. I'm taking control of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. And even in the scrums afterward, like, hey, hit me with any question you want. I'm going to answer it honestly. Like, yeah, I talked to Aaron Rodgers. It's not about Aaron Rodgers. It's about the entire roster. That's honesty. That's coming from within. If you're trying not to say something wrong or trying to say what people want to hear.
Well,
or
we'll afraid, see wherever yeah, we're at.
Or you're afraid to upset
yep,
Rodgers.
Yep, yep.
That's how you get yourself into trouble. And we here in this town in particular sniff that stuff out right out of the gate.
Immediately.
And that's what I loved about Aaron Glenn. Now, do I think the same way that you do that this is going to be a success here? And I know you said like you get a weight, but I still think the right hire would have been somebody experienced, or at the very least, surround him with experience. It seems like Wilkes is going to be the defensive coordinator. We don't know about the OC just yet. I would have preferred if you are going to go Aaron Glenn, meaning a first-time head coach, have an experienced general manager. I mean, I liked what I saw and heard from both guys yesterday, but I felt this way before. You know, Todd Bowles, I felt that way. Even Saleh, I don't remember not liking Robert Saleh.
I was excited about Saleh.
Joe Judge, I was fooled by Joe Judge when he had that press conference initially.
So was I.
We mentioned it with Derek Fisher. So, like, we've been down this road before. It doesn't mean that he's going to be great, but it was refreshing to hear the honesty that Aaron Glenn spoke with, and that is something different than Robert Saleh, who seemed a little timid, even with his great stature.
I liked Todd Bowles at that point because it was the anti-Rex, and I thought they needed an injection of adulthood into the room and just a little more poise and a little less bluster. So I was good with that. I actually liked the Bulls hiring. He's a good football man. And then obviously the gay stuff went off the rails and I was okay with it. You can check old tweets. Like, I never went bonkers over it, but I was fairly enamored by the thought of, all right, let's mix this up. Let's go with an offensive guy. You know, having Peyton Manning's stamp of approval can't be the worst thing in the world. Got a young quarterback. See if you can get him cooking. So I was open to that. Saleh, I really did want, and I did fall for it a little bit here. But you could just compare and contrast Saleh and Aaron Glenn. You tell me which one is more authentic. Like, and this goes back to what Sal was just saying about when you think about what you're going to say and the wheels are turning because you're afraid to, you know, say there's, who cares? Listen, I'm the coach, and this is what's going on. And I thought it was so refreshing and so not only say raw, but, like, it was the perfect combination of presence and intelligence and confidence and all that stuff that we want. And the best thing that he said was, hey, you know what? And he said this and when he was still with the Lions, too. He said, you're not just hiring a defensive guy. You hired a coach. Yesterday, he said, I'm not calling the plays because I want to be able, basically, he said, was, I don't want to have my face stuck down, you know, my nose, my eyes in a play sheet and not know what the hell's happening on special teams or, and I'm just putting film in the gaps here, or why we've run 9 straight passes when their secondary has 2 backups. Let's throw the ball. Like, he is here to be a coach, and I love it.
I love that, too, but then there's going to be more emphasis on who is, in fact, going to be calling the plays. That's going to be a huge thing, especially in today's NFL. BT and Sal on the Fan, and who the quarterback is, which is back to the whole point about Aaron Rodgers. BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Rob is in Norwalk, Connecticut. What's up, Rob?
Hi, BT. Hey, listen, SL. Hey, the most important thing, Rodgers' debt cap hit going into 2025 is $49 million, okay? They don't have a lot of good options for 2025, so he might have to play again. It's critical that the team takes every dollar of Rodgers' contract and hit the cap in 2025. They can't afford to have a $50 million debt cap hit on a 43-year-old quarterback in 2026.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of kicking that. I hear you, Rob. Thanks for the call. I'm not a big fan of kicking this thing down the road. Go for it in terms of just, you know, reworking Rodgers. And they might. And listen, there's capology stuff that I just simply have no clue about. And if they got somebody in the building who's really good with that, then go do your job and set themselves up for better financial solvency. Maybe they can do that. I think it's going to be trickier than maybe some others. I'm not. What I don't want to have happen is, like, all right, punt it down the road and rework 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 deals and then get sucked in 2027 and, like, it's worse. Like, I want to absolve it. I want to take a shot with Rodgers this year and then eventually have the finances lined up where it gets better and better and better moving forward.
Now, I'm assuming if he retires, all that goes away? I don't know the...
I believe...
How could you be penalized if he...
Me
so neither, but how could he be penalized if he retires, right?
Well, because there's bonus money, there's what's not bonus, there's post, like, workout money. Honestly, it's so convoluted.
Fair enough. But either way, aside from the salary cap issues and structure, I want Rodgers back now anyway. And if you factor in the salary cap, potential dead money and all this, like, you got to bring him back. Yeah. The only way that you wouldn't, and that's why I was saying that his decision is going to be telling, because I do believe, and I think you do too, that Rodgers wants to play this coming year. Are you there with me or no?
I do think that he wants to play.
Okay, so he wants to play. So if he wants to play and says, I'm not sure about Glenn, I'm not sure about Muji, I'm not sure about Woody, that to me is telling where he's going to then force his way somewhere else where they might not be many great options for Aaron Rodgers next year. So if and I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to want to play for Aaron Glenn. This is my gut feel.
Me too.
Hopefully we find out sooner than later. But assuming that he wants to play, which we assume he does, and assuming that Glenn and Muji want Rodgers back, which we are kind of assuming that they do, it's the perfect fit. You already have him here anyway.
Yeah.
Why get rid of him, take the cap hit and all that stuff for another stopgap quarterback?
And by the way, that stopgap quarterback's not going to be $2 million. There's going to be more money attached to his name, so it's dead cap hits. And even if it's Justin Fields, Fields is getting $20-something million. Forget about Darnold, who's going to get $30. So, no, again, I'm going to use the term for financial solvency. I think that the Jets' best option is to push forward one more year with Aaron. Question for you.
Yeah.
And I floated, I was kind of kidding around, but I don't know if I'm kidding. Oh, God.
Oh, here we go.
All right.
Hit me with it.
Yeah. So when, let's go back 2 years ago, when it was Rodgers 1, Zach 2.
Yeah.
What was appealing about that situation?
Yeah, well, it's exactly what I wanted, the way that you have Rodgers go out there. Zach could sit and learn and watch Rodgers. You hope to have a foundation being built. Obviously, he gets hurt, the whole thing. But yeah, the fact that Zach would sit and learn from Aaron Rodgers being number one.
Okay, now we all know where Muji comes from. He comes from Denver.
You did bring this up earlier, and you kind of made it like it was a joke, and now you're telling me you're serious about Zach?
I'm not telling. I'm asking. I'm going to actually let you handle this one first. I don't know if I'm very serious. I'm just having a conversation because I don't think there's many other good options. So if the whole appeal was to try to harness whatever talent many of us thought Zach Wilson had when he was drafted, sit, watch, be in the film room with Rodgers, and then, you know, maybe eventually play. Well, he was just in the building with Sean Payton for an entire year. So while he wasn't with Rodgers, there had to be some growth. Had to be. Unless he's just a dolt and, like, he doesn't put in the homework, which could be true.
I
don't think that's the case. I don't. I think Zach is a good kid. I think he wants to learn. He's going to be very cheap. I don't even know what the money would be. And if Muji comes in and says, hey, I watch this young man in practice all the time when he's running the scout team. Sean tweaked a couple things. If Rodgers is back and Rodgers is healthy, is it the worst thing to have Rodgers, Zach, and then the quarterback from Florida State? Is that the worst thing?
Let me volley back before I give you an answer.
Okay.
What if the 41-year-old quarterback gets hurt?
Yep.
Then what? You're going to have Zach Wilson in year one of Aaron Glenn? Dude, you can't do that. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's, especially if Muji was on board with it, I don't think it's a bad plan. However, I think, right or wrong, good or bad, sometimes we chew people up and spit them out, and you're not putting that back in your mouth. And I think Zach was chewed up and spit out, and there's no way. Even Sam Darnold, whether it be with the Giants or the Jets, even though you feel like, well, not you feel like, he has gotten better, I would not bring him back here because I just think it's like going back to an ex when things didn't work out.
Well, I would bring him back. I would bring him to the Giants. I would not revisit the Jets stuff, so why would I even be tempted to visit it with the Zach stuff? Well, there's probably about a $25 million difference in price tag.
You all right? You get a little dropsies over there.
Yeah,
I saw you pick up the.
Yeah, I got to drop the baseball here. What are you trying to imply that I'm nervous?
No. Well, I don't know. It was on camera. Boom. I didn't want to bring it up.
I first had a smoke boom. Then I'm going to tell you. You better have Jazz at second. Jazz better play second. Jazz or Jazz. Second base, booty. No, I mean, it's listen, and the only reason.
You can't go back to Zach.
I know you can't. The only reason I bring that, and we don't even need to exhaust much time on this.
But it's
ridiculous.
It's not. It's not actually BT because there could be. I don't know if there is, but there. What if Zach follows the path of Sam Darnold or Geno Smith?
That's why I bring it up, but also the Muji Denver relationship.
I get it.
Like if Muji came from Seattle, I would never have even asked the question. I wouldn't have asked the question.
Right. New regime, so it's not Saleh and Joe Douglas.
With Sean Payton for a year.
Right.
Watching him, learning. Right.
And you're going to need an answer. Is it better than Jordan Travis? Is it better than somebody else that you might be able to get? Probably not, but, I mean, who knows? There still is a chance Zach Wilson could go be a quarterback somewhere else, but let's roll the dice that he could go somewhere else. Jason is in Stony Brook. Want to talk about the Knicks as we touched on them a little bit earlier. What's up, Jason?
Guys, fellas, great show. I'm on my lunch break. Nothing better. I tell you, every time I call, it's the best. You
Thank
guys
you.
Are really a great team. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the call. Guys, what do you guys think of DiVincenzo and Randle coming back to the Knicks at the deadline? They haven't been doing that great over there. The Knicks need more depth. I'm pumped about the team just because I don't have to think about the Giants and the Jets.
Yeah.
So they need to add depth. The kid from the Suns, Yusef Nurkic, that kid's done there. He has no relationship with Budenholzer.
Mm-hmm.
I would try to add him. He's a 7-footer. We need size. I love Mitchell Robinson, but I don't trust him that he's coming back enough already. The guy will be back in 2026. It's every day we talk about when's he coming back. Nobody knows when he's
Jason,
coming back.
Jason, I brought this up weeks ago. I'm with you. I don't trust him.
Thank you for the call there, Jason. Here's the thing. For me, there are no better options than Mitchell Robinson. We had Ian Begley of SNY on a couple weeks back, BT, to talk about this. He said there was a way to still upgrade. Was it Valanciunas?
It was Valanciunas.
They could get him and keep Mitchell Robinson, so at least there's some insurance there. The thing that's maddening about the Knicks is when they turn it on the way that they did last night.
Oh, last night was their best game of the season.
Okay, so they look unstoppable with that offense. The problem is still the inconsistencies with the offense. And the defense. And that's why I think Mitchell Robinson coming back healthy is their best shot, because he is the best defensive big that's out there. He's better than anybody that's on the trade market. And they have him in-house. They just got to get him healthy and then keep him healthy. It sounds a lot easier, but it's obviously difficult. He reportedly lost some weight, looks to be in good shape. I mean, at some point you got to get him back here. But I'm rolling the dice with Mitchell Robinson. I think the way that they're built is... they have no choice but to roll the dice with Mitchell Robinson.
Well, the problem is, I actually see it the other way. Like the way, now they might, but the way they're built and the finances and the window, maybe it's 3 years for a championship-ish. I don't think it's more than that. If it's even that, maybe more two, based on the contracts, whatever. I think that you've got to make sure that you dot every I, and I can't bank on Mitchell Robinson coming back and being Mitchell Robinson. Now, I will say, I love what I saw last night. And you know, maybe... I overlooked, because this has been really from early in the season. I don't love them. I don't think they're a championship team now. I don't. And right now I would not pick them to get out of the East. But I do think that I overlooked the chemistry department. Like, they had a lot of moving pieces that they had to gel with. And the last couple of games, it's been very, very encouraging. I mean, last night they put up 143, which is great. But they also held the Grizzlies, who could score, and they were a legit team, and they were a hot team. They had won six straight games coming in to 106 points. Do you know, I heard Clyde say this last night, maybe it was Breen, one of the two, last night, after last night, that the Knicks have scored 140-plus points in back-to-back games for the first time since? Take a guess. When do you think the last time the Knicks went 140-140 themselves back-to-back?
Honestly, dude, it's way before my time. I can't even remember.
1965.
Yeah, I would have never guessed that it ever happened. How many overtimes did they play to get there?
I would have guessed maybe like Pitino, when they started shooting all those threes with Strickland and Mark Jackson and Trent Tucker and Johnny Newman. Maybe. No, 1965. So... And you know, the other thing, too, and this was so important, McBride. You know, McBride, he missed some real valuable time, and he's a legitimate athlete. He's not just a shooter. He's got bounce, and he can move. And, you know, he missed some time, but when he came back, the hamstring wasn't right, and it took him a while to get going. You start to see the real Miles McBride, who I've always loved. And there was about a 4 or 5 minute sequence there in the fourth quarter. The Knicks looked like the Globetrotters. Alley-ooping. You had McBride yoke it down with one hand from the baseline. Precious. Like, it was fun. And last night was a sign of maybe what the Knicks could become.
Is the number to call. We'll have Aaron Boone in studio coming up in about a half hour. We get the packs. We're all set to go with that. You know, we reacted in a positive way to Aaron Glenn's press conference yesterday, and a lot of people, you know, some of the criticism is, well, you don't win games on press conferences. Yes, we understand that, but still, there was a lot to be happy about or hopeful about. And you mentioned this, BT, before Aaron Glenn even set foot in that room, saying that you can't win necessarily at the press conference today, but you can lose. And what we saw yesterday in Jacksonville... with Liam Cohen getting hired and his...
Oh, God.
His Duval thing. Ugh. Hoff sent me the text last night. That was... See, that to me... like, remember how we made fun of Newmark's picture, Lance Newmark, the guy the Jets
passed
on?
Well, I don't know if we said we.
Remember how
that was more of a you thing.
Well, I didn't even make fun. I just said, I don't know if I love this picture.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
Yeah, I was like, eh, I don't know. And by the way, he didn't get hired, so it's Muji. Anyway, the Liam Cohen thing, like, I wanted him. I thought it would have been a good hire for a team, not for the Jets necessarily, but a good offensive mind. But then you see that, and you're like, God, how is this guy going to be leader of men?
Yeah, and I dude, it looks...
Duval.
Let me hear that again. Do that again from the beginning.
Duval.
Oh, God. And, like, the look that he has, too, when he delivers
that. That's the thing.
I hear you. Now, listen, I'm sure he's a little nervous, maybe a little overwhelmed. That doesn't mean that he's absolutely doomed, okay? But what it might be is a foreshadow into his style of communication, which does not seem very appealing to a group of 53 men who are putting on food on the table by beating the crap out of each other for a living, being inspired by toughness and strength.
Put yourself in the Jaguars locker room.
I'm texting my buddies right now, like, look at this. Look at this tool. Who is this guy?
That's what I mean. This guy's going to be our head coach?
I know. And the crazy thing, too, because everybody's running with the Duval thing. Yeah. The other thing, too, is he just really comes across as a patent liar. Like, he's talking about trust and, you know, being on the up and up and transparency. And he was so disingenuous during the entire process from Tampa. And everybody's actually calling him out on that more than the cringy Duval delivery.
Good point.
He's got his hands full.
That situation, again,
ain't
who
my
knows?
Problem, Sal.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It could be worse. That situation, it seems like it's set up to be a disaster. You're right. I didn't even think about that. The line. Players aren't going to respect that. You have to have, and that's why it's hard to find the right balance of a head coach or a manager. You have to have the right balance of holding guys accountable, you know, commanding, demanding respect, but also being, yeah, in Leon Combs' case, like, his appeal is his offensive mind. You also have to be, in Glenn's case, let's say he's going to be a head coach, you also have to have the right guys in place to come up with the creative system and have the play calling work. Andy Reid is maybe the best at that, where he's a good balance between players love him, he'll hold guys accountable, and he's the brilliant offensive mind. And they have Spagnuolo to go along with it, which makes them so tough to beat. But it's a hard balance to strike. Like, The Jaguars hired Cohen because he's an offensive mind. Some criticize the Jets because they hired a defensive mind. But one is a clear leader of men that's going to get players to buy in. The other, I mean, it looks like you said, we'd be making fun of him behind his back in the locker room.
Now, he comes across a guy who couldn't even get a date to the prom is really how he comes across, quite frankly.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean he struck out, but... It's an odd presentation, you know, and I'm not even talking about, like, the way he looks. I just mean his method of communication. I don't care how he looks, but, you know, the other thing, too,
But don't you think that's not like we did care about Adam Gase's eyes. We did care about Ben McAdoofus's suit. You know what I mean? Like, there is...
I don't say that you completely ignore it.
Yeah.
No, I don't think you completely ignore it. I think the Duval thing, you know, for like 2 seconds when it's clipped and it's isolated, it looks a lot worse than if you actually watch the stuff leading up to it and the stuff after it, whatever. He's trying to get everybody involved.
But the lies
are probably more problematic. But the other thing that you... Because you laid everything out that a coach needs to have, right? And so Booney will be here in 30 minutes, right? And you
he
know,
better
course,
be. His spot is here.
That's
true. We hold our guys accountable here.
Hey, listen, Booney, you know, it's not going to be like labor tourists loafing around the bases where we're going to let them get away with that stuff. If you're late, you're doing laps. Woo! But you have to be, and I think that Boone is probably great at this, and I'm not just saying this. I think Boone's great at it. I think Gase was horrendous. I think Sala, quite frankly, was probably good at this as well. He's a good family man. You've got to, when people are stretching or at the batting cage, if you know their wife was sick or their child was sick or obviously, God forbid, you lose a parent, like, you've got to be able to push the sports stuff aside and the job aside, and you've got to communicate human to human. And a lot of times, you know, Aaron's 51, a lot of his players are in their 20s, so in a lot of ways, he's like of a fatherly age to many of them, certainly somebody like Volpe.
Right.
So you've got to be able to be that person, and I think that Aaron Glenn can be that too. I really do. I think he's just going to have a good balance.
You know, Parcells was like that.
Yeah.
But, and same thing with, well, Coughlin had to evolve to get to that level, I think. But Parcells, like, his players revered him and they loved him.
Not at first, they didn't. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's what
Coughlin.
I'm
sorry.
No, Parcells.
Yes.
But maybe after the fact, like, I've heard stories from guys who played for Parcells that would say, if a guy got injured on the practice field, he'd be like, well, roll him off. Let's go. We got work to do.
The expression was, Tiki would say this, turn the drill around, even though Tiki didn't play for him. Here are the stories. Turn the drill around means keep going and get him out of our way.
Okay, right. So that would show, obviously, cold-hearted. But there was probably, maybe we didn't see it at the forefront, and I know it was a different time with Parcells in the 80s or 90s, whatever, but there had to be a time where he did connect to be personable or that human, because these guys revere him and love him and say, I looked up to him and he taught me how to be a man and this and that.
Uh-huh.
So maybe he ruled a little bit more differently than it is now, where it's a lot more with kid gloves and a softer touch. But I do think even then, you still had to have that kind of human connection one way or another with your players.
You have to. But the first thing you have to have is they've got to respect you. Like, you can't look to be their buddy and establish those family discussions before the laws laid down that we're here to work. We're here. By the way, did you ever hear the line? Do you remember when Parcells, this is when he was the Pats, he was asked about Terry Glenn, how he looks on the practice field, something like that, or how he's doing with an injury? Do you remember what he said?
Yeah.
She's doing all right, or she's coming back soon. What?
I know, first of all, that, like,
I mean, on so many levels, you could never do that, but he did it. That there was not an ounce of repercussion.
One of his best players. Yeah, and well, I get it. Forget about that it was wrong that he said that, obviously, which is demeaning to females. You shouldn't be saying that.
Yeah.
But back then, it was more accepted, right or wrong, it just was.
Uh-huh.
But it was still a direct shot. Can you imagine now if somebody said that to Malik Nabers or Garrett Wilson?
Oh, my God. No, I can't even imagine.
I'm not even talking about, like, the wrongness of the actual quote, but demeaning the player to that degree publicly, how that would be taken. But Glenn was a guy who, he's passed away, right, Terry Glenn?
He did pass away. Rest in peace, he did.
But Glenn was a guy who responded, obviously, well, and Parcells knew that with certain guys he could do that. And by the way, if he felt that you couldn't do that, probably wouldn't be playing for him.
Even with Krebet, Wayne told me a story once where he had an ankle injury, right? This is just Parcells' methodology. And they were stretching on the field. They were still at Hofstra? Yeah, definitely. They were still at Hofstra, obviously. And it was the game, you might not remember this, but as a crazy Jet fan, I do. Wayne tripped over one of those chain links, the first down markers. One of the chain gang members got in his way. Wayne tripped over it, I believe, on a first down reception, lost his footing, rolled his ankle, right? Hobbled through it, kept playing. Wayne's an absolute beast. He was there yesterday, as you know. And instead of going up to him at practice, hey, Wayne, you know, how you doing? You ready to play this week? Parcells walked up to him unsuspectingly and kicked him in the ankle to see how he's doing. Kicked him. I guess you're all right. Kicked him. Because he knew with Wayne's toughness that if he asked him, he would get the answer that might hurt the team. Because no matter what, Wayne's saying, I'm good. But if you kick the ankle and you kick it in the exact spot, you know where it's hurt, and he knew where it was, and you then judge his reaction, you are able to make a better decision if he's playing or not.
Are you hurt or are you injured? And how about the famous one about the kicker?
Which one?
Is he, Kenny, the doctor's like, oh, I don't know if he can play whatever today. Referring to a kicker. He goes, he doesn't have to play. He's got a kick.
Wait, what kick? Was that Ali Haji Sheik with the Giants? Was that a jet kicker?
I don't remember who it was, but it was a famous one with Parcells.
Really?
Yeah, where I forget the exact quote
He's
there.
He's my favorite. I love Parcells.
Now, he would have had to have evolved here. Aaron Glenn is a Parcells disciple, and he does have that right temperament, but it's not going to be the same way that it was with Bill.
No.
You can't do that anymore.
But he's also 50 or 51. So Aaron, 52, I think. Aaron has seen the world through a different scope. It's going to be modernized, like what's acceptable and what's not. But make no mistake about it. His core principles, old school.
It was one of the doctors saying something like, I'm not sure if he could play today, Bill. And Bill, he ain't got to play. He's just got to kick. Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan on this Tuesday now afternoon. We await the manager of the New York Yankees in about 15 minutes or so. We'll have some fun with Booney in studio. We got the Pull Your Card games all set. We're ready to go with our packs right here, BT. But also, got to get into the Yankees now. We're a couple of weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting. You got spring training on the horizon. Football season will soon be over after the Super Bowl on February, 7th or 9th, whatever the date is. And then it will be baseball season. And with the Yankees, who knows if there's more moves to be made here, but they had themselves as good an offseason as you could have with, factoring in losing Juan Soto.
Yeah, you know that I like what they did. Now, they still got some questions that need to be resolved here. Some we can probably have a better feel than others. Like, I think that Austin Wells is going to be a real plus hitter. you know, for a while here as a catcher, as a lefty. I think he's going to be really good. And I think that him being in the middle of the order, most of the playoffs, and certainly most of the chunk of the back end of the regular season, season is going to elevate him as they start this season. But until it happens, you know, it doesn't happen. And Volpe is year three. That's massive. So we could talk about, and I don't really know what Volpe's going to do. I'm rooting for him, but I'd be lying if I said I think he's going to hit 270. I mean, why would I think that? There's no evidence that he has done that yet or that he could do that yet. The new additions, you know, the Bellingers and the Goldschmidts and obviously Max Fried back in the bullpen, Devin Williams. Yankees have a lot of answers, and they've also got a couple of questions. But I think that right now on paper, Dodgers are in a world by themselves. I think it's the Dodgers, and then I think it's every, you know, the maybe three, four, five other teams, and the Yankees are right there.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the landscape of the American League as well, and who knows where Bregman ends up. And I only bring him up because it could impact the Astros and Red Sox, or Astros and or the Red Sox, which are maybe two of the teams who might be in the way of the Yankees. Like, I look at Cleveland and I just don't see it. Kansas City, I don't see it. Detroit might be better. Maybe they could be dangerous with Skubal.
Yeah, the Detroit was loosely connected to Bregman for a while. But remember when the Astros, I think I said this yesterday, when the Astros got rid of Presley in the trade,
yeah,
it opened up some money that most people think he's going back to Houston.
I was told that Detroit had a significant, I don't even know if this is a report, I'm just telling you some stuff that I've heard. I was told that Detroit had a significant offer for Bregman, but he really didn't want to go there. Which is interesting because they had Hinch there as former manager.
Yeah.
But I guess for whatever reason, he was maybe inclined to either stay with Houston or I don't know where he wants to go. I just know that Detroit's offer was pretty legit and he was hesitant to take it. And I would think if he didn't take it by now, he's probably not going to go to Detroit. But I'm just thinking about teams that could be dangerous to the Yankees in the American League. Like, who are we missing? Seattle?
No, I didn't mention Toronto. What if they get Pete? What if they get Pete?
I don't think Toronto's good enough.
I don't think so either, but I do think, like, if they open the year with...
Who's pitching for them?
Well...
That's the thing.
It's a little thin.
Yeah. I mean, could they hit? Sure, but they could always hit. They've had decent lineups for a while. I don't think they're on the Yankees level.
They're not.
Baltimore, going into last year, would have said... You know, they beat the Yankees the year before, and you would think at the very least they would be on their level, and the Yanks took care of them a year ago. So mm-hmm. I can't.
Baltimore, and they lost Burns.
Yeah, Baltimore, I feel like, has gotten worse.
And Santander.
Yeah, right.
So they lost a lot.
Yeah, and they didn't replace it. We heard about, new owner. Yeah, Baltimore's going to go big spending. They didn't. So I don't know how Baltimore exactly has gotten better.
They haven't.
And
they definitely haven't.
Now, I don't think the Yankees have gotten better, but they're certainly different, and it could work out to be better.
I think they got better in the excuse me. I think the Yankees got better in the sense that their lineup is more circular. There's less of a visible end to it. You know, I think the bottom third is getting better. And a lot of this hinges on whether it's Wells or whether it's Volpe. What position does Jazz Chisholm play? Who's playing third? Do they really believe that? And I can't wait to ask Aaron this. Like, you know, right now, camp starts tomorrow. Is Jazz started second or does he start a third? Like, I want the answer. I did think that there was a chance that the Yankees would make one more move. Goldschmidt was the last move they made. That was $12.5 million for the 1 year. I thought that there was a chance that they would make not really Bregman, but maybe one more thing. And I still, though I think it's a bit of an outside chance, if they're able to kind of engage somebody as they're trying and get a deal with Strom and get some of his money off the book, eat some of the money, then maybe they might make another move. I don't know that it would be a big... They got to get a backup catcher. Trevino's gone. Little things, but the rotation strong. You got Judge. Yankees, pretty good team.
Pitching seems to be loaded up here. Yeah, I mean, and look, it's a team that went to the World Series a year ago, and in a... I hate to even say weaker American League, but I mean, look at the National League on paper. Just look at the Dodgers, the one team that you have to beat, even if it's just that one, not to mention the Braves or the Phillies or even the Mets who should be in there. It just feels like the National League is a little more top-heavy than the American League, but that's not the Yankees' fault. They took advantage of it a year ago, buzzed through the postseason, and got onto the World Series, and the expectations are going to be that they have to do it again, and this time win. I mean, I don't care what it says on paper. You know, the Yankees got there, so they finally got over the hump and got back to their first World Series since 2009. Well, now it's time to surpass that. And even without Soto, they built the team differently, maybe more balanced. The pieces fit the puzzle a little bit better. They got to win the World Series.
You know what? And I'm going to just weave, and we'll get into Soto, of course, but we'll get into all the stuff with Aaron.
He's making me nervous because I haven't heard from him. Yesterday he was trying to bust my chops, being like, so what time Wednesday? Oh, he is in the house.
He's here.
Woo! Booty's in the house. He's on time. Man. Look at that. No fun. All right, so he's texting me yesterday. He's like, what about Wednesday? I'm like, no, dude, come on. You're messing with
me,
right?
He's messing with you. He's a lifelong locker room guy. He's playing with you. Too easy. You fell for it, too.
Well, I mean, we've been promoting the hell out of him. Like, you got to show up.
That's true, too.
I got the stupid eye. eye surgery tomorrow. I got enough going on.
Yeah, what time is that, by the way? I forgot.
I don't know yet. I'm still waiting on that. No. And then my wife's like, oh, you got to tell me when. I'm like, yeah, I'll let you know as soon as I find out. Like,
how do you not know what time surgery is? It's tomorrow.
They said they call and let me know today. Or text me or something. I know. I'm waiting. I'm anxiously awaiting.
Now, you're not taking anesthesia or you are?
I don't know. Not enough to put me, I don't think I'm really going fully out.
So it's
going to
be a local anesthetic, which is, okay, because when you take anesthesia, you can't eat. You've got to do that stuff on an empty stomach.
They said like 8 hours
before. Okay, so you've gotten some
I'm not going to eat anyway late tonight.
Meanwhile, we'll be sucking down steak in about 2 minutes here. So what the hell was I going to say?
Oh, okay.
Well, so even though Soto's gone, I think it's so fascinating. Listen, Juan Soto with 8 Rafael Santanas around him is going to be a good hitter.
Right.
He wasn't amazing last year solely because of Judge, obviously, but it was his best season in most categories with Judge right behind him. And Judge didn't have a lot of great protection behind him. I'm curious, number one, who's protecting Soto?
Right.
And that's a Mets perspective, which we talked about a lot.
Right.
I'm curious if there's maybe a bit of a slight, small, but detectable regression in numbers for Soto without Judge, and I'm also behind him, but I'm also very interested. Let's just put Bellinger in the two spot because he can run. I'm just doing that. I don't know. Could be Jazz, could be Bellinger, could be Volpe, whatever. I'm curious if there's an uptick in whomever is in the two slot this year with Judge behind him, not to the degree of Soto because none of those players are like Soto, but there's so many little, extensions of the loss of Soto and the protection behind. I'm just very fascinated by that.
We real quick before we break, and then we'll come back and have Aaron Boone. What do you think is the number one thing? I have my answer. Number one thing that's imperative for the Yankees to have success this year.
Judge has to stay healthy.
That's it. We're on the same page without even hesitation. Like, that's it.
Gotta stay healthy.
Last year that may not have been the case because of Soto. That's it. All the pieces are in place. American League doesn't look that strong.
Yep.
As far as the competition to where the Yankees are at. It all crumbles if Judge doesn't stay healthy, and you would think maybe more so he could stay healthy being in right field.
Yeah, and listen, now a couple of years ago, I may have been inclined to say Garrett Cole if you asked me that question.
But now Freed.
Well, not only that, but the Yankees didn't have Garrett Cole for a couple of months last year, and their rotation carried the Yankees. You know, they had clutch hitting. Volpe was good early. Cabrera had some big hits. Obviously, Soto was a beast early on where the Yankees were getting some good liftoff, starting with the series in Houston to open up the season. But, yeah, and quite frankly, I don't know that we ever really got full vintage Cole back. So, yes, if Judge is healthy, the Yankees are and he's Judge, which if he's healthy, he will be. You know, they're a 94-95 win team. They got a staff.
BT and Sal on the Fan. When we come back, the manager of the New York Yankees will join us in studio. Stick around for Aaron Boone next.